I'm going to open with a word of prayer, and then we are going to get into tonight's passage. Let's pray. Dear God, I thank you so much for all that you've done. I thank you for a fun week. I thank you for friends that we get to come together, hang out, have a blast. I thank you that we get to learn about horses, that we're challenged, that we're pushed to ride better, to learn better, to be better at horses. But I pray that most importantly, that everyone in this room will be growing closer to you. I pray that tonight you'll help me to communicate truth clearly for your glory, that I'll get out of the way, that it won't be about me, that I'll be humble and clear, that I'll rely on you, depend on you, that it won't be my strength. I pray that tonight you'll grab a hold of every heart in this room, that you'll show each and every one of us how we ought to live, the choices we ought to make. Holy Spirit, I pray that you'll convince hearts that they need you. Convince hearts that they should depend on you. And I pray that everyone will walk away from today desiring to depend on you, having the ability to depend on you based on the scriptures we're about to study. I love you, God, and I give you the honor and glory for all that happens tonight. In your name I pray. Amen. My first time playing paintball was one of my favorite times. Now, a number of you may be familiar with this story. How many of you guys have heard my paintball story? About half of you, which is totally fine. I think it's an important story because it does illustrate a number of things, and I've been told I don't tell it correctly. And Mr. Stevens laughing because he's got an alternate version of it, but we're going to leave that right there. Because tonight we just need, that's all that's important, is my 12-year-old interpretation of what happened that day. And this is based on my own experience, and I know that I have flawed memory, but most of it seems to be accurate in my mind. Now I need to set the stage for you. My first time playing paintball, I'm maybe 10 or 11. And I tell my dad, I go, Dad, I don't want to play paintball. And my father, being a great father, says, sure, son, here's a paintball gun. Go have fun. So he hands me a paintball gun. He hands me the gear necessary to go play paintball. How many of you guys have played paintball before? How many of you guys are familiar with paintball? A number of you may not know, but paintball is pretty simple. You got a gun. It's got some air connected to it that's like compressed and really strong. And when you pull a trigger, it shoots through a barrel. And it brings with it a small round sphere that was filled with paint. And it hits you, and it's like a welt. It just leaves a nice little zing right there. Sometimes you bleed. It's pretty awesome. It's really a man's game. And so as a 10-year-old, I'm going, man, I'm going to be a man, right? I'm going to be paintball guy. I'm going to be the hero. I'm going to go out on that field, and they ain't going to know what's going to hit them because I'm going to be so good. So I get out on the field that day, and I'm prepped. I'm ready to go. I'm excited. And here's the problem, though. My first game of paintball was played at night. And if you've ever played paintball at night, you might be familiar with kind of how things go. You see, for you to play paintball at night, they set up a giant light in one corner of the arena. And it lights up the whole field. Okay? That's fine and dandy for everybody that's not facing the light. If, however, you happen to be on the team that is facing the giant bright light, you cannot see anything. All you get is a bright glaring light and a bunch of silhouettes in the distance, black shadows of nothingness. I, as a 10-year-old human being, happen to be on the side of the court facing the glaring light. I'm lined up on the other side of the field, looking, squinting, trying to see into the light, and I realize this may not go so well. But I'm going to be okay, because I'm a man, and I'm going to be a hero of this paintball match. So I crouch down in a prepped, ready-to-go position. And I'm amped, and I'm ready, and I'm confident that it'll be okay. And the air horn sounds across the field, meaning we can all go. So I jump up in the air, and I run two steps. I hear the first shots go off, pop, pop, boom. I'm back in the fetal position. Not today, guys, not today. I ain't going to get hit by that. My team, they're way up ahead of me, like 5, 10 feet. They're charging that direction. I'm over here. I'm going to stay in the bush, guys. Y'all get them. I'm over here. Like, I ain't about that. Not today. So they're getting whipped. Like, just each of my teammates, man, I'm out. And they're walking off the field. Another guy, I'm out. I'm walking off the field. And before you know it, like, my entire team just clicking off one by one. They're toasted. Each and every one of them. And I realize that standing there in my fetal position in the back corner behind a bush, I'm probably the only person left. And everybody else on the other team seems to be just fine. Because I can hear the paintballs smacking the wall that I ended up moving a little bit, and I'm behind a wall, and I can hear those paintballs hitting that wall, and then I'm getting more scared every single thud that hits that wall. But finally, I say, this is my moment, right? I've decided I'm going to be the hero of this story, so I gotta really man up this time. I'm going to pop over the edge, and I'm going to get some shots off at whoever's shooting at me. Now, I hear the paint hitting, so I know they're in that general direction. So I pop up and go back down for a quick run, just a quick intel look, right? I'm just trying to figure out what's over there. And as I popped up, I noticed there's three silhouettes in front of me. And I just begin to smile. Like, this is it, man. I got them right where I want them, right? They have no idea where I'm at. They're just standing out in the open like, well, they're idiots. Like, just hanging out. I can see them. They probably can't see me. I'm going to get them. My team's going to be like, Bodie, you're the best. So I get ready. I get my finger on the trigger. I pop over the top, and I start unloading as many paintballs as I can. Just shooting out. Just spraying like a sprinkler towards the silhouettes in the corner. Okay, so it's just shooting out. And I pop back down, and I'm pumped. Now the game ends, and I go over to my team, and I go, guys, you got to admit, that was pretty cool, right? Everyone saw that. I just took out three guys. And instead of, like, praise and adoration, I get these looks of, like, disappointment and, like, borderline anger, and I'm a little less confident now, and I'm like, well, I thought it was cool, and I took out some guys, right? And one of the guys finally pulls me over and says, Bodie, you shot the refs. Rats. I'm not a hero, man. Like, I'm the worst. Now, that's the context you need, because now it's my second game of paintball, and I'm a little bit less confident. However, I have with me my cousin, Clay. And my cousin, Clay, you may have heard some stories. I've told some stories in the past about it. If you've heard the story, obviously you know what the problem with my cousin, Clay, is. And he's also the guy that fell off the horse, right? He's the one that didn't cinch it, and it just whoop right off the side. Okay, so this is my cousin, Clay. And he shows up at the field with me. And, man, together, I mean, I may have not been confident alone, but I got my backup here, right? I got my buddy. I got the SWAT teams all together again, right? So we're set. We're ready to go. And, of course, we've got on every layer of clothing that you could possibly wear. I mean, I'm looking like a marshmallow out there. And my cousin Clay, he also looks like a marshmallow. So we're just two marshmallows hanging out, you know, in the middle of the desert. And so we waddle over to each other. And we're, like, doing our high five and stuff, best you can with the gun and a marshmallow. And so we're all set to go. And I'm like, Clay, man, are you ready for this? And he's like, dude, I'm so pumped. I'm so ready. And we're going to take them out one by one. And they ain't standing a chance against us. Man, it's just going to be flames of glory out there as we take people down. And I'm like, dude, you're so right. And so we get into the back of the field. We don't even care what team we're on. We're not even going to talk to our team. Who needs them, right? I mean, I got my cousin Clay. I got my backup. I got a guy that I can depend on. He can help me in any situation. And Clay's played paintball before. And I've not played with him, but I just assume, man, he knows what's going on. We know how to do this thing. So we're standing in a trench together, side by side. And I look at my cousin Clay and I say, hey, Clay. He goes, what? Here's the thing. I got a plan. He goes, okay, hit me with the plan. So I'm thinking, we jump over the edge of this thing, and in front of us, we see an RV, right? And I say, let's run to that RV, and you slide in beside me, and I'll slide in right there, and then we'll clear the RV, we'll make our way along the edge, we'll hit that corner hard, and we'll take out anybody, I'm talking about anybody that comes around that corner. Clay goes, yeah. And I'm like, but Clay, wait, hold up. Before we go, here's the deal. I need to make sure that you got my back, okay? Do you have my back? Clay promptly says, yeah. Okay, man, and I'm feeling good now. Clay's got my back, and we crouch down, and we hear the countdown. Three, two, one. There goes the air horn. What? And Clay and I, we bust over the top of that trench, and we're flying across the desert as fast as two marshmallows can waddle. And we're making our way, dodging around bushes and trying to jump and dive and slide. And really, we're just running like 5 feet. But we think we're going crazy. And I slide into the RV. Shroom, and then here comes Clay. Shroom, and he slides in beside me. And now we're side by side on the RV. And I say, Clay, check the RV. Shroom, he steps to the thing. He's like, it's all clear, man. And then we start making our way along the side of the RV. And as we make our way along the side of the RV, I look at my cousin, I say, Clay, what? Do you have my back? Yeah. Okay, Clay, but I just not positive, man. Like, anything could come around that corner, and I'm just, if I get taken down, man, are you going to avenge me? Do you have my back? Yeah. Okay, Clay. So I'm confident. I'm dependent. I'm ready to go. No matter what comes around the corner of that RV, I'm prepped. I'm ready to go. And sure enough, I hear the sounds of pounding footsteps coming my direction around that RV. And I'm 3 feet from the end of the RV. Now, before I continue, you need to understand that in the game of paintball, if you're within two or three or even 5 feet of someone, there's a little bit of etiquette that you learn. Okay, if I'm within this distance from Mr. Kyle and I've got a paintball gun, I say surrender, giving him the opportunity to surrender, okay? Because it really hurts. Like, this distance, you're poking eyes out, okay? Like, people's livers are falling out. Like, it's just a bad situation. So you've got to say, do you surrender? And if Mr. Kyle says, I surrender, then he's out of the game, but he doesn't, you know, lose his liver. But if Mr. Kyle turns around and begins shooting in my general direction, then I have the go-ahead to just remove livers left and right. So this is the situation. I'm standing beside the RV, 3 feet to the end. Here comes, barreling around the corner, sheer terror at me. Gun blazing the entire time they run around the RV, shooting orbs of death towards me. And at the same time, this individual shooting orbs of death at me, trying to remove my liver, is yelling the words, surrender. I don't have time to surrender, because instead, there's just orbs and spheres of paint just exploding on every part of me, and I'm getting hit, and I'm losing it, and my liver's falling out, my gallbladder, there it goes, and I'm screaming out in pain, I'm like, oh, I'm getting hit everywhere, and I'm trying to surrender at the same time, I surrender, and he's almost in tears at this point, and then that individual, sheer terror, just keeps pelting me, and I just feel like they're just keep taking me down, and it's like, I'm down on the ground, and I feel like they're still hitting me, and I'm like, I don't know what's going on, but I'm in pain, and it's just flames from feet to head, and I'm done. And as dust settles, I look up to see and identify whom it was that eliminated me. And I find out, to my grave embarrassment, to my social suicide, that the person who has eliminated me is none other than my math teacher, Mrs. Watson. Mr. Stevens' wife has destroyed me. I've been decimated. I'm just bones at this point. I'm skeleton. I'm emotionally distraught. But then I realize Clay has my back. And I go, Clay, avenge me. And in my cries of help, I imagine my cousin whipping around me, coming into view, light shining behind him, doves shooting out the side, gun blazing in my math teacher's direction, just destroying everybody in his general direction. But when I turn around to see whether Clay would avenge me, I find out that my cousin Clay has flown the coop. You see, when sheer terror barreled around that corner, my cousin Clay hightailed it. He swan-dived into the RV next to me, abandoning me, leaving me to die at the hands of our math teacher, Mrs. Watson. And that was the day, folks, that I learned an important thing about the world, that there are just some people in the world that just aren't dependable. And no matter what you do, and you try to depend on them, you try to trust them, and they just don't seem to care about the things that you care about. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, my cousin's Clay's got to take care of me, and he's not taking care of me, and he's not helping me. And some people just don't, you can't depend on them. Same thing when it comes to electronics, man. Sometimes you just can't depend on them. Like, this worked 10 minutes ago, and no matter what I do, it's not working. I don't know what the deal is, but that's just, I guess, the way it goes. We'll see if it happens. But it is true. You just, some things, no matter how hard you work and no matter what you do, some people aren't dependable. I mean, you try and you try and you cry out to help and they're not there. Now, if you ask Mrs. Watson how that story went, she has an alternate version. I encourage you, ask her, but filter it because it's not all true from my perspective. But this is just trying to illustrate for you guys the idea of dependence. And we're just trying to capture this whole idea. And you may have heard that story before, but I wanted to tell it again because I think it really grabs the whole concept. Because here I am facing sheer terror barreling around the corner at me. I've got a problem. I'm facing something that I can't overcome on my own. Something that actually terrifies me. Something that's painful. And I'm crying out to help. And my cousin Clay, who would have said only moments before, yeah, I got you, has abandoned me and I can't trust him. Now, we worked through our trust issues eventually. Okay, we got that figured out. But tonight what we're going to look at in 1 Chronicles chapter 5 is we're going to look at a group of people who face sheer terror. And the sheer terror that they face is not simply spheres of paint that leave welts. Rather, the sheer terror, the problem, the fear that they face is the danger of death. Chances are none of you guys are going to be quite in the same situation where you have a sword and you're facing off against another person with a sword who's trying to kill you. Chances are most of us in this room won't face a situation where we have guns facing off against someone else that has a gun trying to kill us. But that's exactly the situation that we find. A group of people facing certain death. Follow along with me as I read in verse 18. The sons of Reuben and the Gadites and the half-tribe of Manasseh, valiant men, men able to bear buckler and sword and to shoot with bow and skillful in war, were 40,703 score that went to war. That was kind of confusing, but what you need to understand from this verse is that there's actually 44,760 warriors from three tribes. And that sounds like a lot of people. But these three tribes, they gather together and they say, guys, we've got to go to war. There's people trying to kill us. There's people trying to take us out. And we're trying to take back this land. So we need to gather together and we need to go to war. Now remember this number, 44,760, because it's extraordinarily important. Verse 19, and they made war with the Hagarites, with Jeter and Nephish and Nodab. Right here, these are the three people that they're going against, and these are significant groups of people that they're fighting against. There's no walk in the park. As the story progresses, you're actually going to find out the significance of this number, the 44,760. But we're not there yet. So keep that number in mind as we continue on. It says in verse 20, and they were helped against them, against the Hagarites, Jeter, Nephish, and Nodab. And the Hagarites were delivered into their hand, and all that were with them. So in a short little sentence, we find out they win the war, 44,760 warriors, and they beat them. They win it. Victory. Well done. The next part tells us, how in the world did they do that? It says, for they cried to God in battle, and he was entreated of them because they put their trust in him. This is an important verse right here. Again, I want to take you back to the picture of me standing by that RV, a marshmallow. crying out to Clay, Clay, avenge me. I was trusting Clay. I was depending on him. I cried out to help, and he didn't help me. Right here, we have a very different story. Because while some people aren't dependable, God will always be dependable. And so here he is. Here we have a group of people that are facing off in a war, and they cry out to God in battle, and they say, God, we need your help. And he comes to their aid, and he wins the battle for them. And if you look down in verse 21, which we won't read, but you'll find out how many people they actually took. There were 50,000 camels. There were 250,000 sheep, 2,000 donkeys, and get the number at the very end, 100,000 men. That's how many warriors, how many people they captured that day. 44,760 people, and they took 100,000 men. That's clearly not something they did on their own. That's clearly not a normal situation. And we find out further in verse 22, for there fell down many slain because the war was of God. I guarantee you guys, in your life, when you depend on God, he will help you. I guarantee in your life, when you depend on God, he has an answer. If he could overcome this kind of odds, 44,000 versus 100,000, almost two times the number of people, if he could give them victory, and he could give you, one human being, victory against anything else, there's nothing too big for God. Now, if I were to end tonight right here, we'd have an amazing, encouraging story about a group of people who depended on God. We'd have an illustration of what it means to truly depend on God and what happens when you depend on God. And really, this first part of the story, it is an encouragement. And I think you should be paying attention to how they depend on God and how they look to God for help and how when they're faced with a problem, they turn to God immediately. If we had time, we would go to Nehemiah 1 and we'd see the same exact thing. And what's amazing about Nehemiah 1 is in his prayer to God, he doesn't focus on what he needs. Rather, he focuses on the character of God. He focuses on who God is, on what God can do. And at the very end of about 10 verses of praise towards God and review of God's character, he finally says, also, could you help me when I talk to the king? That's because Nehemiah was grounded in truth. He was grounded in an understanding of the character of God. And that's what motivated his prayer. And that's what helped him know what was right, what was wrong, how to depend, what he could trust. That's a story we have here. But the story doesn't end. And the next part of the story, the second half, functions as a warning. While we are encouraged at the beginning, this next part is a warning to you. It's a warning to every one of us on what happens when we decide that we don't need God. This is a warning to you. If you're sitting in your chair today and you're sitting there and you're thinking, you know what, I don't need God. And maybe you don't think it in those exact terms, but maybe you're sitting there and you're like, I just don't need to change anymore. I don't need to grow anymore. There's no next steps for me. God is not really relevant to me. If that's you tonight, I hope that you pay attention to this next part because it shares with us a warning. Verse 23. And the children of the half tribe of Manasseh dwelt in the land. They increased from Bashan unto Baal Ermon and Senir and into Mount Hermon. I know I just listed off a bunch of names, and sometimes we hear those names and we all just kind of check out because we don't know what's going on. But all you need to understand is that they gain more land. You see, this statement, these three different locations, it's telling you a boundary expansion. And also at the very end of this passage, or in verse at the end of verse 24, it says that they were mighty men of valor and that they were famous men and heads of houses of their fathers. So immediately you begin to understand that because of their success, because that God saved them from this battle, because the war was of God, they continue to expand and they continue to become well known. They gain fame and land and possessions, and here they are. They've gained success. And here's the question, what are they going to do with that success? Here's the question, are they going to still depend on God? Because here's what happens. You and I, we succeed in life at times, and those are some of the most dangerous times in our life. When you are not facing problems, that's when I encourage you to go read the Bible and be reminded that you need to be depending on God. One of the best things to illustrate this are horses. Because this happens. When you're on a horse, and you're trying to get that horse to do something, and they're listening to you, and they're listening to you, and the moment they start doing it, you sometimes get lazy because you're like, cool, I have a good horse. And so you stop giving all the right cues. And before you know it, that horse doesn't pay attention to you anymore. Because you're not trying to get its attention. And that horse won't depend on you. God is always trying to get our attention. He's always giving us the right cues. Even in times where we're not facing problems, will we depend on God? And here we find in verse 25 what these three tribes decide to do. And they transgressed against the God of their fathers. And went a-whoring after the gods of the people of the land whom God destroyed before them. They stop depending on God, and they start worshiping idols. They do the exact opposite of what we've been doing in the morning. They start finding things that they start putting in their hearts, and they say, you know what? I love and trust this more than God. You know what? God may have given us the victory. That's great. That's cool. Thanks, God. I don't need you anymore. I want to do what I want to do. And you see a group of people collectively moving away from God, stop trusting on God, stop depending on God, and start living for themselves. And finally, verse 26, we see the consequence of that action. And the God of Israel stirred up the spirit of Pul, king of Assyria, and he carried them away. These three tribes are captured by the king of Assyria because they stop depending on God. Here's what's important. At the beginning, we were encouraged. Prayerfully depend on God and you will find success. And life will make sense. It won't be easy at times. It will be difficult. You'll still struggle, but it will work out in the end. And at the end of the passage, we see this warning. If you decide that you're going to live for yourself, if you decide that you are not going to depend on God, then I can guarantee you, you will not be content. God will punish you. And you might be thinking, no, I've gotten away with it. I've not been living for God for years now, for months now, for days now, and I'm feeling fine. I promise you, there will be a time where God will get your attention. Because he's going to punish you. And it may not be this year. It may not be in the next 5 years. You may never see the results of your action until eternity. But it will count for something. Nothing you do is meaningless. God's watching each action. He cares about what you depend on, what you love, what you trust. And so I stand here tonight and I call out to you and I say, guys, depending on God is worth it. And I want to reiterate that the Bible is worth it. And if you pair that with prayerful dependence on God, it'll change how you view the world. And it'll help you in every single situation. Because here's the reality of the world that we live on. If I sat down with every single one of you in this room and I asked for you to list out some problems that you face right now, if I asked you to list out the things that make you cry, that make you upset, that make you angry, that make you sad, the things that you don't know how to solve, the family situations that you just don't understand, why in the world is this happening to me? The friends that you have that maybe have abandoned you or don't care about you or don't love you or have treated you wrong. And it may seem like an insignificant piece of the puzzle. It may seem like an insignificant piece of life, and you don't feel like you can tell other people. Because other people aren't going to care. They're not going to know or understand how it actually makes you feel. Every one of you could probably list off things that hurt you and difficulties that you go through and friends that have hurt you and family that have hurt you and life situations that just don't make sense. Because all of us have some form of sheer terror that we face on a daily basis. But the cool thing is, and the reality is, that we don't have to go through this world on our own. That you don't have to go through your difficulty, your sheer terror, on your own. It's not you who gets you through life. It's not you who solves the problem. Those three tribes didn't win the battle because they were great warriors. It so clearly states that the war was of that that same statement can be made about your life if you do the same thing as them and you don't have idols, but rather you're prayerfully depending on God. Because that's the hope that you have. Because it's the creator of the universe. He spoke and things existed. Do you understand that you have an all-access pass to the being that spoke and gravity came into existence? In your chairs. You don't have to close your eyes. You don't have to do anything. You could literally talk to him at this very moment. And he listens. And you could share with him the difficulty that you're going through. And you could tell him, God, I don't understand how this works. And I can't figure it out. And I don't know how to solve it. And I don't know how to deal with it or feel about it. And it's confusing. And it's difficult. But God, I need your help. And I can stand on the reality of Scripture, on the objective truth of God's Word, and tell you that He will listen and that He will answer that prayer. The answer won't always be the way you want it to be. The answer won't always make sense to you. You may not hear anything or know anything, but you've got to continually depend on God through prayer. It's worth it. It's the answer. Again, we've talked about this all week. If I just said those words right here, if I just left you with this statement, replace idols with prayerful dependence on God, I don't know if we would know exactly how to do that. We would say, okay, I could pray at this moment, and that might be the extent of it. But how do I live this out on a daily basis? And if you're like me, when I see a statement like this, I want to know what's next. I want to know how in the morning I could change my life, how I could change how I live. I want to know how next week I could be actually doing this. So stick with me. I have a number of things that you and I can do on a daily basis that will help us prayerfully depend on God. If you don't get anything tonight, I at least hope you get these number of things, that you write them down, that you try out at least three. I encourage you, as you follow along in this list, maybe pick two things that you say, you know what, that's what I'm going to do. Maybe pick three, or maybe one thing that you're like, this is going to be a lot of work, but that one thing is a thing that I'm going to do on a daily basis. The first thing is very simple. Pray in the morning. It may sound childish. You may be like, I've heard this before. But I'm telling you, when you start your day off, when you've prepped your mind by praying, your morning will then set the stage for the rest of your day. The second thing is keep a prayer journal. I encourage you is to get a piece of paper, something that you can write on, something that you keep with you. For me, I have if you've ever seen my little leather notebook, it has a little slot in there that I keep a list of things that God is doing in my life and a list of things that I could be praying for and thanking God for. And because that prayer journal doesn't always have to be a list of requests. That prayer journal could just be a list of things that you're going to pray and thank God for. But here's one of my favorite things about a prayer journal. When you write those things down, when you write down, God, I need help with this, and you make that list, and you begin marking the things off that God has helped you through that have been solved, you'll be amazed that when you get to the end of a year, you'll look back on page after page after page where you're like, oh yeah, God did that. Oh yeah, God provided for that. He helped me through that situation. He gave me the comfort in this situation. I'm now content about this situation. He helped me to deal with whatever I'm going through in life. The third thing that we have, first thing was pray in the morning and then keep a prayer journal. The third thing is really simple. Simply, when good things happen, thank God. Sometimes this is just the discipline to sit down and make a list of things that God has done for you. This is just the discipline to say, you know what? I'm thankful that I'm saved. You know what? I'm thankful that I got to breathe for another day. I'm thankful that I got to see my friend today. I'm thankful I'm at horsemanship. I'm thankful my school's paid for, that I have another meal, some food to eat. Let that sink in. Let the reality of how much God has given you sink in and let it alter how you view the world. The fourth thing is ask God for help during difficulties. This simply means that whenever something difficult comes up, maybe it's just a test that you don't know how to get through this week. Maybe it's a friend that you don't know how to treat right. Maybe it's a person that doesn't understand you and keeps hurting you, keeps egging you on. Maybe it's a family member you don't know how to love. Whatever difficulties you face, you can take them to God, and He will help you. Number five is simply pray before mealtimes. This one sounds kind of silly, and I've actually heard people say, well, I don't really pray for meals anymore because it's just something we do, and it doesn't really have a reason to be there. And sometimes we do that. We actually get into this a loop of just praying. All right, when it's mealtime, I'm going to pray, say the words I need to say so I can pray, and we forget what we're doing. But you know why praying before meals is such an important thing? Here's why. Because when you pray before a meal, it means three times a day you were reminded to talk to God. Because three times a day you're going to eat. It's just a way to stay consistently praying towards God. It means three times a day you get the opportunity to thank God for another meal. Three times a day you get to thank God for provision. And that's cool. It's cool to have something connected to something you do so consistently. And that's why I encourage you, don't stop praying before meals. Actually take it seriously. Actually be like, you know what, I truly am going to mean this thanks, this praise towards God. I'm going to actually truly mean it. It's not just words I'm going to say. Number six is a really big one. It's one I don't do enough. It's one I wish I was better at. It's one all of us would benefit from. Simply pray with your friends. I'm amazed at how the friends in my life that come up to me and say, hey, Bo, do you want to pray about this? And how we spend time just praying for help through this or difficulties that we're facing, and we talk to God together. I'm amazed at how encouraged I am, how much I learn just from simply praying with the friends around me. And it might feel weird. It might feel awkward. You may seem like this is just, you may get funny looks for it. But the right friends are going to want to pray with you. They're going to want to spend that time with God. Number seven is pray about your future. All of you guys are in a situation where you may not know what your future is going to be. You're kind of under your parents right now. You're still figuring out high school. You're still finishing up some things. And you might have plans about the future. And you might have things that you want to do with your future. But I encourage you, you're never too young to start praying about where God is leading you, about where God's going to take you. Number eight, pray about your fears. All of you probably have a fear, something that terrifies you. Maybe it's your future. Maybe you just don't know where the next $1,000 for your college is going to come from. Maybe you don't know where the next job that's going to pay for your schooling will come from, or a vehicle to get you to school. Or maybe your parents don't have enough and you're afraid of what might happen to your family. You can pray to God for help. And finally, to bookend things, simply pray before falling asleep. One of the last things I encourage you to do at night is talk to God. If you start your day talking to God, you end your day talking to God, and you keep doing that, you'll be amazed at how your perspective changes, how your view of life changes, how your reactions to people change, how your reactions to difficulties change, how your contentment changes. These nine things, I encourage you, at least look up there, maybe circle two in your notebook. Maybe put a star next to two of them that you really want to do. I can guarantee you I struggle with these things. There's a number in here that I'm like, I really want to do that, and I'm really bad at it, and so I've got to keep working at it, and I've got to keep saying, this is how I'm going to prayerfully depend on God. So we finish up tonight. It's very clear that the third thing that we're going to fill our heart with is prayer. Once we fill up this whole heart, we'll have an illustration of what your heart should look like if you're going to incline unto God. And if you're going to be serious about doing the right thing for the rest of your life, then your heart is going to begin to look like this. It's going to be focused on a relationship with God. by reading the Bible, by praying. Tomorrow night, we're going to fill in that last slot. Tomorrow night, we're going to complete the heart. My hope is it's an illustration that you continue to remember and continue to go back to. Let's close in a word of prayer. Dear God, I thank you so much that every one of us can just talk to you, that no one in this room is unable to communicate to you. I thank you that you listen, that you care about us. None of us here deserve your love. None of us deserve to be able to talk to you. I pray that you help all of us to depend on you. That you help all of us to look to you for help in life. We can't solve life's problems on our own. In your name I pray.